Hello, everyone. As always, it's Laura for the UFO No More podcast. But today I have a special guest. It is the blog editor for UFO No More, Brittany. Say hi.
Hi.
And you can find me on Twitter at Japanese_ginger. And do you want to say yours?
Yeah, it's at Brittany, Brittani, _91.
And of course, our blog at UFO No More, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and our site, so check that all out. I just thought it'd be fun, since I have my first guest, we're going to go through a lot of topics this week. It's a very eventful royal week, and perhaps nothing dominated the news more than the news about Prince Henrik. He had been in the hospital for a treatment of a lung tumor, and we got news on Friday that his condition really deteriorated, and I'll let Brittany pick it up from there.
Yeah, he was originally in the hospital in Egypt, where he was staying back in January. So they transferred him back to Copenhagen, and then they said at the beginning of the month that he had the benign tumor on his left lung and a lung infection, so pneumonia. And then it was Friday, like you said, and they released a statement that said, "The state of His Royal Highness Prince Henrik's health has unfortunately severely worsened. His Royal Highness the Crown Prince has thus discontinued his stay in South Korea, where he was in conjunction with the Winter Olympics. The Crown Prince is now on his way to Denmark." And so Frederick arrived back in Denmark or close to midnight, probably like 10, I guess. And Queen Margaret, she actually returned to the hospital with Frederick at that point. So that was her second visit of the day. And then as the days have gone on, you know, I think it was the day before yesterday, the entire family was there, which kind of gave everybody the feeling that maybe it was the end, but thankfully it wasn't. And so now his siblings, his younger sister, she's a nun. She has visited him. She's come from France. And his two younger brothers have now come from France. He has another sister, but she is too unwell to visit. So, unfortunately, she's not able to go to Denmark to be by his side. But it seems like since all the family is now in Denmark and making visits, it's not good.
And I saw something on Twitter I wanted to point out. Frederick returning from the Olympics is just a huge deal because he is a member of the IOC. And so this is a big patronage for him, a big like part of his duties as a royal. And the last time that he did this was in 2000 before he was a member of the IOC. And it was when his grandmother, Queen Ingrid, was on her deathbed. And so that obviously tells you a little something about this condition too. So it's very, very sad. And I should point out, this is all as of Sunday evening. We are recording this, so if between now and Monday morning we get more news, that's why it's not may not be completely current.
I do think that if he were to sadly pass away overnight, that it would be released probably around 8 to 9 a.m. Danish time, which if you're in the United States, that would be about 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern time. So
middle of the night for us in the States.
Yeah, in the States, so. And if you're in Great Britain, they're an hour behind Denmark. So just be aware of that. And I should also mention that Queen Marguerite has canceled her engagement for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It was at a hospice that was celebrating their 25th anniversary. So that also tells you how serious it is. And however, her engagement for Friday has not yet been canceled. So
yeah, but obviously something very serious going on in Denmark and not really a great way to transition from this at all. I can't really think of how to, except to say that we were mentioning the Olympics, and so kind of going to perhaps a more happier topic. It is the Olympics. They started, and I've been watching a little bit. It's always very fun to watch. And, of course, there are many royals involved. There are 8 royals who are members of the IOC. A few I wanted to point out are, as we said, Crown Prince Frederick, Princess Anne of the United Kingdom, Prince Albert of Monaco, Grand Duke Henry, I'm terrible with the French pronunciation, Henri.
Same here.
Of Luxembourg. And then some other ones we have coming are King Carl Gustaf and Queen Sylvia of Sweden, And already there, because I've seen them, are King Willem Alexander and Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, and then Crown Prince Håkon of Norway will be attending. And I did want to point out today, I wrote this down, I watched Sven Kramer win the speed skating, and my favorite part was how excited the king was. He was just flipping out. So excited.
They always get so into it, and I love it. They're very supportive of the Dutch athletes, and I love it. They just seem like they're really friendly and, you know, great with people anyway. So it's great to always see them at the Olympics.
Yeah, and you love that because it's like, that's what a royal is. It's supposed to be like promote the country and be the big cheerleader for the country. And it's like, he was really doing that today. He was like chanting his name. It was so cool.
And they've sent out, the last I've seen, it was two tweets. They wished all the athletes good luck during the opening ceremony where they were. And then after a female Dutch athlete, I'm not sure who it was, after she won gold, they also sent out a congratulations yesterday, I believe, for that. So I'm sure they'll probably send one out for Sven, too, at some point, if they haven't already.
And I think we saw a similar thing for Carl Gustaf and Sylvia, for a Swedish athlete. They said, make sure you save some for us when we get there, because we want to
turn them on. So I believe they arrive on the 17th, so they've got a few more days to get there. But Sweden usually does fairly well in the Olympics, the Winter Olympics.
And I did see, because obviously Brittany and I both love hockey, we won't talk about that much on here, but no NHL at the Olympics. However, Sweden has some really good young talent, so they might do well at the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, and then Russia's going to have, you know, the KHL athletes, so.
So I'm
a little bitter.
I'm really bitter, but I'm like, maybe 1980-style miracle hoping.
Yeah.
Anyways, I did want to point out, Brittany has two really fantastic articles on Royal Central, which she also blogs for. You're the European editor, right?
Yeah, the Europe editor for Royal Central, yes.
And there's one on the royals who are members of the IOC, and there's one on royals who are attending, and that's where I got all of that information that I just shared with you, so please be sure you check those out.
Yeah, they're on my Twitter and everything, so you can kind of go there, or just go to Royal Central and you'll find it. We'll be keeping you guys updated with Henrik and everything as well as time goes on.
I saw a great timeline on Royal Central about Henrik. They made like a whole timeline of the different events. So that was very
his cool. health. Yeah, I did his health. Actually, that was actually me. I wrote that one up last night, and it's the timeline of his health. And it started last year, and now we're to where he's at now. Sadly.
Definitely, Royal Central is our big friends of the UFO No More blog, obviously, because we have Brittany. So, check all of that out. Moving on, something that just broke not that long ago, Harry and Meghan released details about their wedding, and I'm going to turn that over to Brittany because she has a lot of the details for you right there.
Yes, it was actually embargoed until after midnight UK time, so we had to sit quietly until the information was allowed to be shared. But the update said from Kensington Palace that, Prince Harry and Meghan, that they're hugely grateful for the many good wishes they have received since announcing their engagement. They're very much looking forward to the day and to being able to share their celebrations with the public. They have made the following decisions about their wedding day on Saturday, the 19th of May, 2018. And so the update includes the wedding service at St. George's Chapel will begin at noon. The Dean of West Windsor, the Right Reverend David Connor will conduct the service, and the Most Reverend and Right Honorable Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who officiated the wedding for William and Kate, will also officiate as the couple make their marriage vows. And then at 1 o'clock p.m., the couple will undertake a carriage procession along the route from St. George's Chapel. So they'll leave Windsor Castle via Castle Hill, and then we'll go through High Street through Windsor Town Central. And then they'll return back to the castle along the long walk. And they said that they hope the short journey will provide an opportunity for more people to come together around Windsor and to enjoy the atmosphere of the special day. And so the reception will be at St. George's Hall for the couple and all their guests at the wedding. And then they will obviously join the the reception after the carriage procession. And then later that night, Charles, Prince of Wales, Harry's father, he will give a private evening reception for the couple and their close friends and family. And then Kensington Palace did add, "We look forward to sharing further details about the wedding day in the weeks and months ahead."
So that's all. I mean, it's so exciting. And someone pointed out, it's not completely unreasonable for people in the United States. It's on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like something like 7 or 8 a.m. Eastern.
Victoria Arbiter, her dad was actually worked for the Queen. And she now lives in the United States. She's the one who revealed that information on Twitter. She said that it will be 7 a.m. Eastern time for the service and 8 a.m. for the carriage procession. And it's on a Saturday, so she said you can even stay in your pajamas.
Which, I mean, so it's like obviously a little early than maybe most of us are used to getting up to on a Saturday, but not unreasonable, not like you're going to have to adjust your sleep schedule crazy amounts. So that's kind of right. Nice, because I remember when William and Kate got married, that was real early.
It was, and I was a freshman in college at University of Tennessee, and my English class was based on romance, and so we had to pick a project, so it was due on April 29th, so I chose the royal wedding. I had to stay up all night to work on that project. I was so exhausted by the end, just because we had to, you know, stay up. I think stuff started at like 4 a.m., so yeah, I'm really glad this this is more at 8.
A little easier for us royal bloggers to get up and tweet it, and coming off of all the christenings that I've blogged about, like, this is a lot easier. I'm happy about yes. that. And I think the procession will be, like, I like that they do that. It seems like a good balance of, like, public stuff, and then also, like, you talked about Charles having the evening reception for just close friends and family. So kind right. of a good balance between a family celebration and the public stuff that we come to expect with royals. So I think that's...
Oh, yeah. And I think the town of Windsor is going to be packed. I mean, it's a small town. And so with the amount of people that are going to be in town for that, it's going to be a madhouse. I honestly think it probably would have been better to have it in London, but it's their wedding, their choice. But I think London probably would have been a bit more roomy for people and everything.
I was hearing Jess, a friend of ours, said, even local people, like London people, can't do it because the train from London to Windsor is just going to be insane. Mm-hmm. And like, you won't, like, there's just, it's going to be so packed.
Yeah, it's going to, madhouse. Like I said, madhouse.
I'll be watching from my living room, but.
Well, I'm hopefully going to be there for Royal Central in the media section, so hopefully.
Oh, that'll be fun.
We have to apply for accreditation and everything, but hopefully. So maybe it won't be as packed for us in the little media pit.
So stay tuned for more information about that.
Yeah.
So then some other kind of announcements we had earlier in the week. Princess Madeline of Sweden, it was announced that she is going to give birth in Sweden. She's currently living in London, and so that it was kind of like speculation, London, Sweden, where is she going to give birth? And so the court made that announcement. She, I think, probably this, because it said mid-February, which would be this week or maybe even next week, she'll be returning to Sweden.
Sweden. I would say it'd be this week because as she's getting closer to her due date, she won't want to fly. So
yeah, and it's getting to the time where they won't let you. Mm-hmm. And so that they're going to return to Sweden, stay in Sweden, and then she'll give birth in Sweden. But they did mention, made a big point about this, it's paid for privately because none of her family is currently residents of mm-hmm. Sweden. And then I also just wanted to point out Leonor was born in New York.
Yes, she's an American citizen.
Pride for us.
One of ours.
And then Nicholas was born in Sweden. So this will be the second of her three children to be born in Sweden.
And it would have been kind of, it would have been a nice story for them to tell if this child had been born in London, that all three of their kids were born in three Global different countries. Family. Yeah.
I will say I understand that. Madeline and her family, because of Chris being private citizen and how it all works, there's a lot of criticism, and so I kind of understand why they did the Sweden thing, that they just wanted to avoid some of the criticism. Mm-hmm. And so kind of switching gears to something maybe a little more frivolous, but this is also, I think, serious too. Some talk about Kate's fashion, and where it gets serious is it was announced that William and Kate are going to the BAFTAs. And the BAFTAs this year, they're doing similar to the Golden Globes, where all the women are going to wear black dresses for Me Too. And I saw a lot of speculation about, like, is Kate going to wear black, blah, 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 is it too political? And I thought a little of it was just almost too much and over the top. Everyone wore black at the Golden Globes, and there's many ways to do it. It's not like all of these people wore mourning gowns. They all, right. Like, some of them had patterns, some of them had lace, some of them were bedazzled, so, like, all different kinds of gowns. So there's a lot of room in there, but I just don't see a case in where she doesn't wear black. I think she's going to.
And I think even if she doesn't wear black, she may wear something dark, like a really deep navy, like she did for the St. Andrews reception in New York. And I'm not sure who it was by. I want to say maybe Jenny Packham, but I'm not sure. Yeah. It was Jenny Packham. I can see that being kind of the type of outfit she would do.
And I also think, like, and the British obviously are their complete own as far as, like, being very careful on the political statements. Mm-hmm. But I think if you even want to call this a political statement, is about as tame as it can be, because it's not saying anything about specific policy or anything. It's just saying more like standing up for women. And it's like we've heard Crown Princess Mary say much more. Recently with the end of year video, we heard Princess Sophia of Sweden say a lot more than what wearing black would say. So I think
The royals in general have been supportive of the whole Me Too movement, because Queen Rania Jordan has said stuff about it. Sylvia, Queen Sylvia of Sweden, Crown Princess Victoria, even Prince Daniel of Sweden, they've all mentioned their support for it. So it's not going to be out of the ordinary to show support for Me Too, considering everything that's been going on.
Yeah. And no, all that said, I wouldn't expect, like, Kate to grant an interview where she talks about it, like maybe some of these other royals had, because I think that might be a little much for a UK royal, but I just think wearing black is so not even, I think it perhaps Twitter made a little more of it than it actually will end up being.
Right.
So on a little more of a frivolous note from BAFTA's more serious Me Too, I did want to talk about the Scandinavian fashion from the Kate and Will's trip to Norway and Sweden, because I think that's fun and I didn't talk about it that much last week. So, obviously, I think the great starting point is what I think is the most amazing gown of the whole trip, her McQueen gown. And so I'll let Brittany give her thoughts on that.
Oh, it was my favorite of the trip, too. She wore it to the dinner in Norway, where she walked in with King Harald. And the light pink with the cape and the whole design of it was just gorgeous. I wish we could see her in it again. It would be like a great tiara dress, as you and I have discussed before. It's one of those, I really hope we can see her in again at some point, even though she was pregnant. So it would be more if she had a fourth child, I guess. But
I saw someone found, oh, Perth's Fashion on Twitter, who's a great fashion finder, found the orange version of the dress. The light pink version is way better. Just
yes, it is.
And so I'm so happy Kate wore it that way. I overall just thought it was a very, very good trip for Kate. Some different things from her. The houndstooth coat is, like, my favorite daywear by a mile. And then, like, I said this before, but even that green coat and dress, it wasn't, like, my favorite. It was very classic Kate, but it was done very well. I just thought a lot of her stuff was great. And I even really liked the hockey outfit, because it's, like, it was casual, but it had style and some flair to it, and so.
And I'm from the South, you know, here in Tennessee, so we call the knit caps, or whatever you want to say, we call them toboggans. And so I confused a bunch of people on Twitter because I called it a toboggan, but in Canada, a toboggan is a sled, and if you ever hear me say toboggan in the future, I'm talking about a knit winter hat, and I'm Southern,
Canada,
so I'm sorry.
It's like toque, right? I know that from hockey. In Canada, they call those toques.
Yeah. So, sorry for confusing everyone.
It's the language barrier, time barriers, language barriers. We have that all in the royal fandom, but
oh yeah, and when you're from the South, it's we have an entirely different form of English. So sorry about that.
And then I think the other thing we wanted to talk about, there were a couple. Well, there's one major, and then one maybe misses, and it was the lovely Air Dems.
Oh, that the mustard floral silk contraption was just it. Sorry, Kate, that was horrible. It was not flattering, and you know, it wasn't just like the color and the floral thing. It was just the actual design of the dress. It had like a higher neck, and then the sleeves flared out, and it was just no. Please, Kate, never wear that thing again.
I will say, like, Heaven mentioned this to me, and I do want to get it out there, because I think people were, like, definitely, it was pretty decidedly against that dress, and I would agree I didn't like it, and if I just saw it, I would be like, that's not a good dress, but I did like it. It had a point of view, which is something Kate's outfits sometimes don't have. Sometimes it's, like, the same coat dress over and over and over again, and so I liked that there was a little more, not style, but just, like, of a statement. But it wasn't a great statement. That's it.
She could have had a better statement outfit.
The second night was better. Mm-hmm. It was a little simpler, but it was still a little much. And then, kind of going off that, Victoria struggled a bit in the evening department. Mm-hmm. Kate wore two Air Dem dresses that were very and Victoria wore two style-in outfits that were very And so it's like they're both kind of competing with the night for, like, most meh, not really liking it outfit.
Right. And, like, the outfit Victoria wore for the reception at the British Ambassador's house, like, the black color, that was flattering on her. It was just the cut of the whole thing. Again, it was just, like you said, the length and the sleeves. And, it was just not flattering.
And even, I think this, I liked the second night maybe a little more, but I still didn't really like it. The red top was almost like swallowing her, and it was a little much. Her day wear, I thought, was better. The coat from the first day I liked. The dress, I was a little mixed on.
I didn't like the neck on that either. It was too high.
It was a little much. And then the second day, I mean, the suit, I liked that she wore a suit. I think she had to know Kate was going to wear dresses a lot. So I thought that made for a good contrast. Not sure about the color completely. It was kind of an interesting shade of green. But I just liked that it was a little different point of view. I thought it worked well. And then I did want to mention, too, in Norway, Mette Marit, that gown she wore the same night as Kate, her and Kate brought their A game so much. And Mette Marit, for people who don't know, prairie dress on prairie dress on prairie dress, not good. It's so hard to cover her fashion because it's just not much there.
And it's hard to identify her stuff too, because a lot of it, we don't know the designers or it's specially made. But her style is interesting.
Yeah, but this like one, said. She brought it. It was so good, so fashionable, and so those group photos they had, just stunning.
Oh, agreed.
And so I was, and even, I didn't necessarily love Martha Louise's dress, but the fact that it was modified so it didn't have the sleeve on it, I thought helped.
Mm-hmm. And I love that she walked in with Astrid, too.
Yeah, that was cute.
I hated to see Astrid with the crutches, though, but
yeah, I love Astrid. Low-key, one of my more favorite royals.
And then Sonia's outfit, the color was pretty on her, but I didn't, the skirt, I thought was just, again, it wasn't overly flattering. It kind of poofed out.
I always grade Sonia on a bit of a curve, because her style's a little interesting. Like,
very true.
I remember, I think she has this yellow dress she wears all the time that I really don't like. So I just, like, I always grade on a little bit of a curve. I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
I liked seeing the winter wear that they wore in Norway, too, at the, when they went to Holmenkollen. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. It's the ski jump.
Oh, yeah.
The outfits, you know, you can't really mess up an outfit like that, but I really like, you know, seeing them in the winter wear and getting to go to the ski jump and all of that anyway, so.
And Kate used the opportunity. She wore, like, a Norwegian sweater underneath, and she had, like, the colors on. So it looked really nice, and that's definitely where Mette Marit, I think, really shines, because she just looks so at home and natural, obviously, being from Norway, and so I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't overly fond of Marit's outfit when they ate at or had the tea at their private home. The skirt was, I don't know, I think a skirt like that needs to be one that falls like right at the knee, and this one was below it, but what do I know?
It's like, Mette Marit, I'm always just like, she's fine, like, it is fine. But then that's why the gala was so amazing, because I was like, oh, where'd that come from?
Yeah, she really knocked it out of the park on that one.
So it's like, that made up for, she could almost wear whatever, because she wore that amazing gown.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So that kind of wraps up a lot of the news topics I had for us, but I thought, since I have my first guest, and since we're the two of the bloggers from the site, it would be kind of fun to answer some questions about ourselves and kind of give the people listening a little intro into who we are and how we got into this. And so I'll ask the question, then I'll let you answer, and then I can answer after.
Okay, that works.
So the first question is, how long have you been following Royals, and what made you start following them?
I have been following them for a really, really long time. The first memory I have really of the Royals was, I remember Diana, because I was a kid when she passed, and I remember being at the lake with my family, and we were in our camper, and the news came on that Diana had been killed in the car crash, and I think it was really starting there is when I really, really started following them, and then I did projects on them in middle school, and then obviously in college, so I've been, I guess at this point, a couple decades.
Long have you been with Royal Central?
I started Royal Central, my first article was published on January 9th of 2016, so 2 years, basically.
Just celebrated 2 years.
Yeah, it's flown by. I was a blogger for a few months, and then I got promoted to Europe correspondent. And soon after that, I was promoted to Europe editor, where I'm at now. And we have a really good team there as well. And it gives an opportunity to write and learn more about the Royals that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
So, counter to Brittany's experience, it's not quite as long. I did watch, like, I think most people did, Kate and William's wedding in 2011, but that did not really start my passion for Royals. That came in June of 2015 when Carl Philip and Sophia got married, and I saw a BuzzFeed article about it, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. And so I watched their wedding and kind of started seeing stuff, and I think I saw Sarah, our owner of our site, and saw some of her stuff. And then started following the Swedish royal family, and I already knew a little bit about the British royal family, and so kind of dug in from there, started making some finds, and then the one that really, like, torpedoed things and made me work a lot more on it was Wimbledon. In 2016, I believe, Kate wore a McQueen-printed dress that I found, and I got retweeted by a lot of people, and all of a sudden, people started kind of communicating with me more about it. So I kind of got more into it after that, and so it's. But I owe a lot of it to the Swedes, and so that's why they're my favorite. But
they're my favorite too. So I completely understand. Best to follow.
Great. Next question. Favorite royal, but you can give us a couple if you have.
My favorite is Princess Madeline of Sweden. I love her. And I guess part of it, you know, she lived in the United States for so long, working with childhood in New York, and I just feel like she's really. I know a lot of people think that, you know, she doesn't work enough for all that in Sweden, but she's taken her royal role, and as Chris said in a recent interview, her husband, you know, she doesn't always want to utilize the princess title. She wants to do good, but she doesn't want always the credit for it. And so I think a lot of her work goes unnoticed. And then I love how she is with her kids and the fact that she shares so many insights into her life on her Facebook, and I just really like her in general.
And kind of to go along with that, my favorite is Crown Princess Victoria. I love how she is with her family. And right up there, I think Prince Daniel is really underrated for being a person who understands his position and has really carved out, because he was really passionate about fitness, and that's how he and Victoria met, because he owned a gym she went to. And I think he's transformed that into Gen Pep, which is his cause, and I think it's really cool to see their whole family and how they understand their roles and embrace their roles so well, and how they've kind of taught Estelle little by little what her role is going to be. So I really love them, and even Sophia, I'm still like getting to know her because she's kind of new to the royal family, but seeing how she's kind of found her own voice and her own place in the family, I really, all of the Swedes I could talk about, they're all great.
Oh yeah, and I have to add Princess Estelle.
Yes.
People call her the little sass queen. I just love her little personality. I can't wait, you know, to see how she is as she gets older, and she just seems like such a sweet little kid.
Yeah, and I love how she's been involved in, like the last christening where she poured the water and then, like, blessed the water. That was so cool. I love her.
She was so proud of herself getting to participate like that. Hopefully, when Madeline and Chris have their third child in March, she'll get to, for the christening, get to participate there, too.
Yeah, for sure. So, this next question I picked intentionally, and I know your answer, but I really wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about it. And so it's favorite royal cause or cause you'd like to see more royals take up.
My favorite royal cause, well, some royals have taken it up and others have not, and I really, really would love to see them take it up. It's ALS, or if you're in the UK, it's MND, motor neuron disease, also called Lou Gehrig's disease. It's a cause very, very close to my heart. My mom actually passed away from it in January of 2016, and so I've been able to see it firsthand of what it's really like. And it's a heartbreaking disease that no person should ever have to suffer from. And the more awareness we can raise for it, the more funds we can raise for it, we can finally get much-needed research into it to maybe find a cure, a way to slow it down. Because there's so many forms of ALS. You know, it can start in your limbs. Or in the case of my mom, it started in the bulbar region, which is usually the last stage. And basically it hit her and it impacted her throat, mouth, tongue. So she started not being able to chew. She would choke. And then it hits the lungs. And it's just a devastating disease. And I just hope and I beg royals to please get involved. The ones that are involved, I will mention Princess Anne in the UK. She is heavily involved. She's the patron of MND. Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, back a couple years ago, swam in the Amsterdam City Swim for ALS, which was nice to see. Prince Albert of Monaco took part in the Ice Bucket Challenge that swept the web and also donated money. King Philippe of Belgium, they tweeted out a picture back then of a garbage can filled with water, so it kind of made you think that he took part in the Ice Bucket Challenge. And then there's Queen Letizia of Spain. She is the president of the Spanish Association for ALS. And then Crown Princess Victoria works with a patronage that works on neurological diseases, which, of course, ALS is. And the same goes for Princess Astrid of Belgium. So I'm really thankful and grateful to those that are involved, but I'd love to see more take up the cause.
And I just wanted to add something because I have been following this person recently, and I think it's not royal, but everyone should follow. Pete Frates was the inspiration for the Ice Bucket Challenge, and he's very active on Twitter, very big Boston, from what I understand, Boston sports fan, and just definitely recommend. He's very much inspirational, and so definitely worth a follow.
Side note, it was the Boston Bruins, my hockey team. Go Bruins. Sorry. that kind of started the Ice Bucket Challenge because of him. So I was very proud that my team kind of started it and it spread all across the world. It was really great to see.
Yeah, so definitely I wanted to highlight that in part of our question. I would just add for mine, I don't have near the passion that you do for understandably, but still mental health. I love seeing how it's the heads together. And I think a really important thing, so obviously there's the stigma aspect of it, but it's not just talking. Like, that's an important thing, but it's also getting people to treatment, and it's really been nice to see heads together kind of embracing that part of it more and talking about, okay, now we've identified people who maybe need more help and stuff like that, and let's work on getting them help. So that's been nice to see. So, again, not a great transition out of very serious, important things to, what are your favorite tiaras?
This is a happier note from that. I love the tiara in Sweden that Princess Madeleine wore a couple years ago to the Nobels. The I think it's Princess Christina's, maybe? The aquamarine.
Yeah, Princess Margareta's, I think.
Margareta's is okay. The aquamarine, I can never say.
Kokoschnik?
Yeah, thank you. I never could say that. But that's my favorite. I really liked it. And with Madeleine, it really brought out her blue eyes. And then Victoria got to wear it this past year for the Nobels, and I was really excited to see her, and it worked really well with the dress she was wearing and everything. So that's my top favorite, and then I really like the Cambridge Lover's Knot as well, I have to admit. And that goes back to Diana. But
yeah, that's Diana. I love that tiara too. So my favorite tiaras, I think I love amethyst. That's my favorite stone. I've said that before. And there aren't many good tiaras, so the best of the bunch, in my opinion, is the Norwegian one that's like a necklace made into a tiara. It's very simple and not very big, but I like it. It's a very nice style. The Swedish one is a little too big and circular, and so it just kind of lays on people's heads and doesn't really look great, except Madeleine wore it one time really well, I thought. I did want to point out, so our two favorite tiaras, if you go and look at our little icon on Twitter and on our site, you will see them, because all of those pictures are favorite tiaras of our bloggers. One of them is no longer with us, so we actually have to get that changed, which we'll do sometime. But it's just kind of a fun little fact about our site.
Yes. And we have a new writer, Samantha, and so we'll add her favorite tiara to the site when we get that updated.
Yeah, and definitely. And it was nice to get to include some quotes from Samantha last week too, so definitely look for more stuff from her. And so my last question, I think this is kind of really fun. If you could trade closets with any royal, who would it be?
Can I pick more than one?
Go for it, because I have a couple too.
Okay, well, Meghan is not technically royal yet, but I really, really, really love her style. It kind of matches with my own, so definitely hers. And then I really do like Princess Madeleine's style, so I would add her to the list, because I like what she wears. And those are two of the two main ones that I'd like.
Yeah, okay, so I was going to say, if we're going for what style would be, like, your style, just an upgrade and obviously more expensive, Meghan definitely fits the bill, because her, like, neutrals and the way she wears things. I bought the Marks and Spencer sweater. She wore that one time, because it's great. And so it would probably be Meghan, just for the closest to my style. But if I'm going for the style that I wish I could wear, wish I could pull off, or just wish I had the time to, it would probably be Kate's, just because I like how classic and, like, most of Kate's things, save for maybe some of those Erdem dresses, you're never going to look back 20 years and be like, oh, wow, that's totally out of place now. Like, she wears very classic designs. Mm-hmm. And so I wish I could pull off some of what she does. I just don't have the money and the figure that Kate does. So I love her style. So that would probably be mine. So with that, is there anything else you would like to add, or anything, any projects or anything you want the people to know about?
No, I just want to add that, you know, we're keeping our thoughts and prayers for all of the Danish royal family going on right now, because seeing your family member, I'm sure, you know, from personal experience, it's a very difficult time. So they're in our thoughts and our prayers, and I hope they can find some peace and comfort and everything during this really, really difficult time.
And yeah, and just speaking for me, I know that obviously we have the Olympics and some other stuff going on this week, but I think that that's going to be something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on every day and just concerned about. It's a very sad situation. And I would add, with how the whole thing happened last year, with the comments that were made publicly, and then the dementia diagnosis, this has been a rough year plus for them with this whole situation. And so it has to be very difficult. And so, of course, thoughts and prayers with them as they go through this. Not just the Royals, but also Henrik's side of the family, too. So,
and the Danish royal family. That's the Danish, sorry, Danish people. You know, I'm sure they're, you know, that's somebody who's been a figure in their lives for so many years. So I'm sure they're very downcast as well.
So with that, I will just add that you should follow UFO No More on Twitter. Follow, it's, let me see if I can get it right, BRITTANI_91. Got it. On Twitter, and Japanese_Ginger on Twitter, and that would be all of us. And I really want to thank you again, Brittany, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned for next week, where we'll cover Royals again. And thank you all for listening.